I'd like to welcome Dar Jamail. Dar's a very courageous person, as he's one of the only journalists to have worked independently in Iraq, where scores of journalists have been killed and often deliberately targeted since the 2003 invasion. You can read about Dar's experiences on his website, which is www.darjamailiraq.com, and also in his book, also for sale at the back, Beyond the Green Zone. A very warm welcome, Dar.
Thanks very much, and actually this dovetails, how I want to start dovetails perfectly with what Nick was just saying, because it was on September 6, 2002, when the White House Chief of Staff, Andrew Card, in talking about the PR campaign for the Iraq War, said, quote, "From a marketing point of view, you don't introduce new products in August." He was talking about why wasn't basically the PR campaign launched earlier. And on that day is exactly what he did, is he sort of unofficially announced a massive PR campaign to sell the idea of invading Iraq to the people in the United States and the world, because it was the next day, September 7, 02, when Bush and Blair stood together at Camp David and cited evidence from a UNIAEA report, which did not exist, that claimed that Iraq was, quote-unquote, 6 months away from obtaining nuclear weapons, et cetera, ad nauseum. And what I want to really focus on in this brief time is I think context is everything when we talk about the invasion of Iraq and the occupation, since we just passed the five-year anniversary of the launching of the invasion. And some of this has come out, at least in the mainstream media in the United States. I don't know how much over here in the UK, but certainly in the United States, a little bit of this has come out. But certainly now that we've just passed the five-year anniversary of the fall of Baghdad, you're very hard-pressed to find any information about U.S. policy. And what's astounding to me is that all of this is available as we speak online. Anyone can get online right now and read the National Security Strategy of the United States, basically based on the PNAC, the Project for the New American Century, the Quadrennial Defense Review Report, Joint Vision 2020. Read any and all of these documents, and you'll get a very clear picture of the U.S. agenda. And I think when we talk about Iraq, this is critical at this stage of the game, and certainly now with the ongoing bellicose rhetoric against Iran, which I would argue we have a PR campaign in full swing against Iran as well, which is a very frightening prospect. But I want to read a quote just for context. This is from the Quadrennial Defense Review Report. There's a stated ability for the U.S. military to fight multiple overlapping wars and to, and this is an important quote, quote, "to ensure that all major and emerging powers are integrated as constructive actors and stakeholders into the international system." That's what the U.S. military is to be used for, according to the Quad Defense Review Report. "To ensure that all major and emerging powers are integrated as constructive actors and stakeholders into the international system." Other things that are often then left out of context, of course, things like corporate profiteering and oil. I mean, it was Vice President Dick Cheney who said in 1999, during the campaign for Bush's presidency, quote, "By 2010, we in the U.S. will need a further 50 million barrels of oil a day. The Middle East, with two-thirds of the oil and the lowest costs, is still where the prize lies," end quote. One other thing for context I'd like to read. We talk about when will the occupation end, when will U.S. troops come home, when will British troops come home, are there permanent bases, are there no permanent bases. Two quotes I want to read you. One is from a U.S. military official in Baghdad, April 1903, 10 days after the statue was pulled down. Quote, "There will probably never be an announcement of permanent stationing of troops in Iraq. Not permanent basing, but permanent access is all that is required," officials say. And that's exactly what we see happening with Bush and the puppet Prime Minister Maliki and these ongoing efforts to kind of usurp the majority will of the parliament of Iraq that actually does not support permanent access and permanent bases. And this legislation is essentially, as we speak, they're working on trying to push some of this through. The other quote I want to read you for context comes from the National Security Strategy of the United States. Quote, our forces will be strong enough to dissuade potential adversaries from pursuing a military buildup in hopes of surpassing or equaling the power of the United States. To accomplish this, the U.S. will require bases and stations within and beyond Western Europe and Northeast Asia. If you read these three documents that I cite, you basically have to be brain dead not to see that there is a very clear U.S. agenda for control of the majority of the world's resources and their shipping lanes. That's not my opinion. That is stated U.S. policy. You can read it for yourself. And that is consistently left out of the discussion when we have to have context when you report on a story. And if we're talking about Iraq, how long is this occupation going to continue? Arguing about pulling out troops, pausing troop withdrawals, Petraeus and Crocker's recent dog and pony show in front of Congress the last couple of days. Again, where are these questions about context? And another thing when we talk about is there's been severe media repression in Iraq. And of course, today, the security situation alone is the biggest problem when we talk about media repression. And I mean, you know, you go around Baghdad, and I haven't been in there nearly as recently as Kim, for example. But even the last time I was in Iraq, it was getting almost impossible to travel around. You go down the street, I was with my main interpreter, Hart, and you look down the street, and there's three guys in civilian clothes with Kalashnikovs and a few tires thrown across the street. Who are these people? They could literally be anyone. Of any intel agency, of any militia, maybe of the Iraqi government, nobody knows for sure. And so you have to do a U-turn and try to find a different route to get to where you're going. You go down another street and you see these things again, and there was more and more of these floating checkpoints popping up. So how do you report in a situation like that? It's extremely difficult. But even before it degraded to that point, in Fallujah, for example, during the April 2004 siege, I went into that city on April 9 during a quote-unquote ceasefire, if you listen to the U.S. military, and this was broadcast by a large percentage of mainstream media, certainly in the United States. And as I went into Fallujah under this ceasefire, I saw with my own eyes F-16s bombing parts of the city, helicopters attacking other parts of the city. I got in there and saw ambulances shot up by U.S. snipers and people being brought into a clinic, mostly women and kids, all saying the same thing, that they're all being shot by American snipers who couldn't push into the city. But on April 9th, there was an interesting thing that happened. This came out kind of after the fact. There was an Al Jazeera camera crew in Fallujah broadcasting images of civilian homes being killed, women and children wounded, really, really quite damning footage. And part of this so-called truce negotiation that was happening between fighters in the city and the U.S. military, one of the demands of the U.S. military, as far as truce and if we're going to bring this to a peaceful end and have negotiations here, one of the first demands of the U.S. military was that Al Jazeera camera crew has to leave the city. So there's a bit of media repression directly from the U.S. military itself, needless to say. And I want to talk very briefly about some of the current propaganda, certainly in the United States. I don't know how consistent these criticisms would be with mainstream media here in the UK, but in the US, the surge, the propaganda that's accompanied the surge has been extremely effective. The surge is better, and I could go in to great detail about the bogus nature of first the propaganda wave was, well, people are coming back to their homes in Baghdad and things are better. To this day, according to the UNHCR, less than 60,000 people have returned to their homes in Baghdad. In the most recent UNHCR figures show, that's in a context of 4.9 million Iraqis who have been displaced from their homes. Basically, one out of five Iraqis in the total population of the country have been displaced from their homes. And that's, of course, left out of the context of the fact that, according to Oxfam International, 4 million Iraqis are in need of emergency aid. That's as of last July. And I would argue that situation is even worse today, according to many of my Iraqi contacts on the ground in there right now. Meaning, if they don't get access to safe drinking water, food, and access to medical care when necessary, they're literally at risk for their lives. And then just going with, I think, what are now conservative figures on the number of people killed, according to the study published in the Lancet Medical Journal, back in October of 2006, which is now grossly out of date. At that point, 655,000 was their mean number of Iraqis killed. At that point, that was 2.5% of the total population of the country. And it's this context that in the U.S. today is consistently left out of discussion about Iraq. We can talk about, yes, there may have been some security gains made in Bakuba, albeit temporarily, or parts of Baghdad or other cities around Iraq. But again, where is the context of the fact that 5 years ago today, Iraq's overall population was roughly 27 million people? That number is now under 25 million people. And when we add up the basic figures that we know for fact, 4.9 million refugees, according to UNHCR, and that is a conservative figure. I've been told that by Sybilla Welks, the regional spokesperson of UNHCR itself. But let's go with 4.9 million, assuming the 4 million Oxfam International figure of people in need of emergency aid is consistent today, and then as many as another million dead. We're talking about over 9 million people, or closer to 10 million people, of population now just under 25 million. So well over 30% of the total population in the country are either in need of emergency aid, displaced from their homes, or dead. And still, to this day in the United States, the brunt of the mainstream media coverage is, well, Ryan Crocker and General Petraeus just told us things are getting better. Yeah, they're fragile, et cetera, but things are getting better. And I think context is so, so important because, as Kim said extremely accurately, you know, this is an extremely volatile and fluid situation in Iraq. 2 weeks ago, we didn't have massive overt instances of clashes between government security forces and various militias. Now, for the last 2 weeks, we have overt fighting across much of the country from central Iraq on down because of Daud al-Sadr's Mahdi Army militia. And that happened on a dime. I mean, that happened when Maliki launched his offensive in Basra, and who knows how this is going to be resolved. But again, we have to, I think, it's critical to stay focused on the context. You know, and in the U.S., we can consistently have reporting that, well, violence, before the recent even clashes with Sadr, violence is down. Well, as of February, there was an increase of 33% in Iraqi civilian casualties. And then again in March, a 31% increase over the previous month in Iraqi civilian casualties. And this month is on tap to easily, if these trends continue, beat the previous 2 months as far as increases in civilian casualties. So I think it's really critical that we keep proper context in mind, and especially now when we look at what I feel to be another massive PR campaign to wage war against Iran, again under extremely fictitious circumstances.